You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Good morning, Tri-State. I have an exciting guest here today that I've just met this morning. His name is Verdelsky Miller. He's been involved in helping defend people in this community for a long time and has serious concerns about the drug and alcohol issue here and the offenders that are being put away because of their addiction. So I'm excited to have him. You'll be excited to meet him. Verdelsky, go for it. Tell us about you. Thank you for coming.
Hey, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate what you're doing. I know you work with the drug court in Ward County.
Yes.
I know there's a great drug court program there in Ward County that's fairly new.
Yes.
And I know that it's kind of a model of the Evansville program, the Vandenberg County program, which is one of the models in the country. So this area, you know, the Evansville metropolitan area is leading the United States in drug court programs and recovery programs. And, you know, seeing what you're doing for the in the recovery area is very, very exciting, very, very interesting. And, you know, I think Evansville really has a lead on that right now in the country.
I'm just
hoping that my clients and others that find themselves caught up in the addiction of narcotics and substance abuse and those kinds of things will actually take advantage of the various programs that are out there. So.
And we were talking before, and I hope you don't mind sharing this, and I hope it doesn't offend you. I'm bringing up a little of our conversation, but you had mentioned you went through your whole young adult, college, law school, and didn't drink and drug.
Well, you know, I mean, when you were trying to get my resume, when you were trying to get my resume, and a lot of people try to
like,
get my
he's never used.
Well, you know, it's just one of those things that you just try to be different. And being an African American male in this society, for some strange reason, people have a tendency to try to want to put you in the middle of a scandal. You know, hey, you're a black guy that has a little street smart, so you got to be a drug user. You got to be a drug dealer. I mean, those are the types of stereotypes that African American men have. But, you know, when you were asking me about my background, you were kind of surprised to find out that the only time I've ever seen an illegal substance is when I'm in court defending somebody trying to beat a case for it. I just never did. Never had a desire to. Wanted to be different. And, you know, even when I were to go to clubs in college, I would, when my friends would order a drink, a mixed drink or something, I would order milk or ginger ale if milk was not available, because I wanted to impress the ladies that I was different. But anyway, that's another story. Enough about me.
So then law school, what made, did you go to law school specifically to make a difference in the world?
Well, quite frankly, I did go to law school so I could make a difference in the community, but I also went to law school because, you know, again, African-American men are stereotyped, and we can only do so many things according to society's standards and society's norms, and I just kind of wanted to be different. I wanted to be able to have a few street smarts, but I also wanted to let people know that I had a few book smarts. And combining those kind of led me into law school. I wanted to be an attorney or a pilot. I took a few pilot lessons. I hated it. I ended up going to law school.
So I always wanted to be a lawyer, but I was just never that smart. It's so much research. But I think there is this part of us that does want to make the world a better place.
Look, women
are stereotyped too.
Look. I'm living proof anybody can do this stuff. I'm living proof. I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. I'm not the smartest brother on the planet. As a matter of fact, I'm not even the smartest brother in my family. So I'm living proof anybody can do this. But enough about me. I really want the community to know that the program you have there in Ward County and the program here in Vandenberg County, those two programs, the drug court programs,
yes,
are leading the nation in recovery and alternatives to prison, those kinds of things. And, you know, it's getting to the point where the judicial system has to look at alternative methods before they lock people up all the time on an addiction.
Yeah.
And I think the programs that are here in Vandenberg County, I'm not saying they're addressing it as well as I would like for them to, but that's my personal, you know, I'm biased.
Sure,
I'm a defense attorney.
There's always room for
improvement. Yeah. But the Evansville community, you know, Judge Trockman over there in Vandenberg
awesome.
County,
yes.
Judge Myers, even though Judge Myers and I sometimes don't see eye to eye with his judicial rulings.
You mean in the courtroom?
In the courtroom.
Yeah.
Judge Trockman and I are the same way.
Sure.
But I think Judge Trockman and Judge Myers are really putting forth their best effort. I think they've gone beyond what is expected of them in the area of recovery opposed to incarceration.
You are so right. And this does take more work to work with substance offenders because they have a lot of issues. When they get clean and sober, there's still a lot of work to be done. You can't give up on them.
Exactly. And what's happening is, I mean, you've got to look at when you have doctors, lawyers, businessmen, you've got movie stars. I mean, you have all kinds of people that have their lives basically mapped out for them. They're financially secure. They've got every possession they could ever want. They've got access to unlimited lines of credit to get whatever they want. And they're ruining it. They're throwing all of that away for a high, for an occasional high. So there must be something very, very attractive to illegal substances. Now, what it is, I don't know, but you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that there is a problem with illegal substances that goes beyond criminal behavior.
Absolutely.
There's got to be some type of medical addiction, some type of addiction that is uncontrollable that...
It's a compulsion.
Yeah, it's some type of compulsion that's there that's grasping and grabbing these people to do something, to throw everything away on a high. You know, money, wives, families, material possessions,
yes.
You know, reputation, futures. It's being destroyed. So...
And you've seen it.
Oh, I see it.
The best down, yeah.
I see it every day. And the program...
I think judges and lawyers buy into this disease model of addiction, that this is an illness, these aren't bad people, they're sick people.
I think Judge Trockman and Judge Myers have begun to look at it that way. Now, look, I've been
Judge
practicing...
Judge Niemeyer, too.
Yeah, and Judge Niemeyer, you're right, Judge Niemeyer.
Yes.
You know, and you've got a couple of other... Judge Held over in Circuit Court, even though the... Judge Held, Judge Kiley, you've got a couple of magistrates that are really, really good at trying to work with prevention more so than...
Yes.
Incarceration. You got Judge Markham, Judge Maurer. You know, Rich. I can't even. You know, I mean, I know him by first names. I can't.
Even O'Connor.
Jim Damore. O'Connor.
You know, all of them are getting.
They're getting there. I mean, they still gotta put people in, you know, in custody and hold those individuals responsible for their actions. But you've got you've got judges now that are beginning to say, wait a minute, we can't lock up everybody.
Yeah.
You know.
Verdelsky, you'd be a good one to ask. Do you think there still is a difference between a black person going in front of the courts as opposed to a white person with the same charges?
Now, come on now.
I'm putting you on the spot, but seriously.
Do I think that?
Because I've seen that in my time in working in the courts.
My
with
question,
women, children, young people.
My question to you is, are you asking me, do I think that?
Yes.
Or do I know that?
Do you know that? And
there's
how
no,
can we change
there's
it?
No doubt in my mind that African Americans are treated differently, more harsh, in a more vacuum, in a less tolerable sense when they appear before the court. Black people are treated differently, unfairly, more harshly. What else you want me to say?
No.
Any kind of way
I'm embarrassed
I can,
to tell you I've seen some of that as well.
There is no doubt in my mind. I'll
How
give you.
We change it. I mean, I know my judge doesn't want that appearance. And I know the judges I've worked with in drug courts anyway. There aren't a lot of black people that stay in the recovery circles here.
Tell me about it. But look, how do we change that? Come on, now look. This is America, where the golden rule applies. Those with the gold make the rules. And because most African Americans have no gold nor access to gold, they are very, very limited in which rules they can make and are most subjected to the rules of those that have the gold.
Well, let me throw this at you. One of the guests I had earlier on, Robert, who is a recovering alcoholic, said himself that in the black community, they do not believe alcoholism is a disease. As long as you can provide for your family, if you drink a fifth a day, nobody's going to call you a drunk or an alcoholic. That there's still this, that alcoholism is a white man's disease, and it's very hard for black people to access treatment because they see it as a white person's deal. Now, he said that. I had never thought about that before.
Well, my response, when people talk to me about what black people do and how black people think, and, you know, my first response to a question, and I do have an opinion, don't get me wrong, but my first response is, don't think I'm so naive to believe that I speak for all black people. Okay, we have different opinions. We have different attitudes. We have different.
Well, hold.
Okay. Have I seen it? I've seen a lot of things, but I want to address that first. I cannot speak. I do not speak, and I do not allow. Oh, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but I am very cautious about letting the power structure tell me that I speak for all black people. I do not. And I am not going to take the position of being, this is how black folk think. I have no clue as to how the guy down the street is thinking about certain issues unless I know that person, okay? Or unless I see his or her actions on certain issues. So I have no clue. Now, do I think that black people can drink a fifth and don't think that that's being an alcoholic? My response is, certain people can drink certain amounts and will be considered, it will be categorized differently.
Yes.
Some people may be able to, I mean, I probably couldn't, I don't know, but some people probably could drink a fifth and be perfectly functional.
Oh, yeah.
Other people could not drink an ounce and be functional. So, do I think alcoholism, does Verdelsky Miller think alcoholism is a disease? Yes. What categorizes you to get to the point of being an alcoholic? I don't know.
How did you come to learn it was a disease? I mean, do we need to do better at educating people that this is an illness?
I think, tough question, probably. There's an enormous amount of information out on narcotics, alcoholism, drugs, and all of the other illegal substances, pills, prescription drugs, the whole bit, methamphetamine. There's an enormous amount of information out there. I think the question is, how do we get that information to society? And here's the flip side of that. Does society even care? See, I'm a firm believer. I'm a firm believer in the general public does not include those that know or those that care. If you know or if you care, you are not considered, in Verdelsky Miller's opinion, part of the general population. The general population doesn't know, doesn't care. If you are informed, you are part of the informed population, and that is a very small percentage of the general population. Of the population, period.
Yeah.
So getting information out, it's out there.
It's out there.
It's out there.
Would this radio rehab be a good way to inform more? Because people don't look for the answer sometimes.
By all means. Now, the radio rehab, this program, the community knows. I'm sorry?
Should we use this to do more informing?
Sure, we can do this to do more informing, but here's the kicker to that. Okay, so people know the radio rehab program is on the air. When it comes on, are the listeners that traditionally listen to this station going to continue to listen? Or are they going to flip to another channel to
sure.
listen to something else that is more conducive to more attractive to their liking? Are they going to watch TV? So it goes right back to the information is there. The
yes.
question is, those individuals that want to get it will get it. Those that have no interest in it won't. Now, are those the alcoholics and the drug and the narcotic abusers and the addicts or their families? Those that want to get the information will. Those that don't want to get the information can watch BET at 11:30 in the morning right. on Saturdays.
Right.
And that's where we are. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I understand that there, and I know some of the owners of the station here. I know there's a proposal trying to be developed that is being developed now to put this radio program over the intercom system in some of the jails around the tri-state area. I think that's an excellent, excellent proposal. Hopefully the jail commanders around the tri-state area will allow that and permit that so that those incarcerated can hear what's available to them. Of course, they know it's out there. There's just a question of how do they, you know, if they are interested enough in pursuing mm-hmm. the avenue to get that information.
Sure.
People know it's out there.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's been out there since I was in elementary school. I graduated from Howard Roos in 1973.
My
we
goodness.
Talked about drugs and alcohol then. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's 30-some-odd years ago.
Yeah, I graduated in 1973, too.
Yeah.
But I graduated in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, so that was different than Evansville, huh? There was a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
You didn't hear about alcoholism, but you definitely heard about drugs, you know, with Vietnam and...
You know, and again...
But alcohol was...
It's part of the change of times. Heroin, LSD, uppers, downers, barbiturates, those kinds of things. 60s, 70s, early 80s drugs. Methamphetamine, crack cocaine, powder cocaine, prescription drug pills, you know, Dilaudids, lower tabs. Oh, that's the new drink. It's pretty much the
You're
same.
Right.
It's just a change of preference.
Yes.
But the addictions are still there.
In the person.
Do black people get treated differently, which was your original question? By all means. You know, you've got now, I'll give you a good example. I'll give you an excellent example.
Okay.
In the federal court system, an individual with crack cocaine, a certain amount of crack cocaine, is treated so much harsher than the individual with the same amount of powdered cocaine. Now, it's just like Marlboro and Newports.
Mm-hmm.
White guys have, their cigarette of choice, Marlboro's Camels. Black guys, their cigarette of choice, Newport Cools, Benson and Hedges Menthol. You get busted with crack cocaine, you're looking at long time. You get busted with crack powder cocaine in the federal system, you're looking at soft time. You get busted with methamphetamine now. They've got all kinds of recovering programs available for meth users. Now, all of this stuff for meth users just developed over the past 5.5 to 7 years.
That's right.
From the past 5 to 7 years, it has ballooned
yes.
as it relates to recovery for meth addicts. Why do you think that is?
I have asked that question. I don't know.
You don't know? I can tell you. How many black guys you see downtown in court in handcuffs on a meth charge?
Not too many.
How many white guys do you see downtown in handcuffs on a meth charge?
Hundreds a year.
That's why you have, because white people are affected more adversely than black people are by methamphetamine, you now have programs to clean up methamphetamines. Whereas black guys' drug of choice is crack cocaine. You don't have the various programs for crack cocaine. You've got the penitentiary and the judicial system to deal with crack cocaine, but you've got drug counselors and you have all types of recovery centers for methamphetamine. Don't get me started, especially on the air. I don't know who. I could care less who's listening, because the judges know how I feel.
Yeah,
I've said it to them.
We're an open book here. Radio Rehab wouldn't work if we weren't an open book.
Well, they know how I feel. I've said it to them. I've been in meetings.
Remember in the 90s, there were cocaine programs. I don't know.
Powder cocaine?
Yes.
There were cocaine programs. You're absolutely right.
Mark
there
Bolton
were
started the Cocaine's Anonymous. Yes.
Cocaine's Anonymous and all, you know,
certain cocaine tracks.
Oh yeah,
Koala Center.
You have Koalas. You have
cocaine track.
You have all of that.
But it was powder, yes.
And it was powder cocaine.
Yes.
Rock, crystallized rock cocaine is a black man's choice for an illegal substance, generally speaking.
Sure.
I'm being
sure.
very general now. Call me a racist if you want. Quite frankly, I don't care. I've been called it before. But powder cocaine is the cocaine drug for white middle class America. And you have all kinds of programs for it. You have all kinds of inpatient treatment facilities for it. And you have all kinds of counselors for it. Mm-hmm. When you deal with rock cocaine, instead of sending those individuals that are dealing with rock cocaine addiction to the same people that you have powder cocaine addiction for, you send the rock cocaine addicts to prison. Why do you think we have our jail cells full of drug, African-American drug addicts?
Yeah.
And you have the hospital beds full of Caucasian drug addicts. When white people get hooked out or strung out on dope, is considered a medical problem. When black people get strung out on dope, it is considered a crime.
Wow. Maybe now, that's what Robert was talking about when he said what he said about, you know, the white man's disease. Yeah, it's treated medically for the white community, criminally for the black community. I never thought about it that way.
And most white people don't, until somebody like me is in a position of where we have to say something about it.
Oh my gosh, Ferdowski, I'm learning more than anyone from this show.
Now,
you know, you don't think about that stuff.
One of the things, and I really have got, as I said, don't get me on this black white horse, okay?
No, I don't mean it to be that way. We're talking about a serious problem in our community.
I do want to commend Judge Myers and Judge Trockman on a situation that both of them have begun, or they now recognize that relapse is part of recovery. You know,
it's definitely part of the illness.
It's part of the disease, and it happens. Yeah. I don't know if I'm terming it or phrasing it right.
No, you're doing fine.
But relapse.
You don't have to relapse.
You don't have to. Right,
when
right.
You're in recovery, you're not really relapsing.
Correct.
But you can slip up.
You can slip up.
Definitely.
You can slip up.
And it happens.
It happens.
Heart disease, cancer, diabetes.
Correct. It comes back. Yeah. Any type of medical condition you have.
It's a day at a time.
It's a day at a time.
Absolutely.
They go in, remove cancer.
Yes.
6 months later, it may be back.
And you may not follow the plan the doctor tells you with that cancer when he says walk 3 times a week, don't eat any fries.
Correct.
You know,
and
how are we any different?
Correct. So when you get into a recovery program,
it's suggested you do
something. It is suggested that you do things. When you're in a diabetes program, when you're in a cancer program,
absolutely.
All of those programs.
The doctor suggested.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G. When you are in a recovery program for narcotics addiction,
right.
Your counselors and your doctors make certain recommendations.
That's right.
If you follow those recommendations, more than likely, and it's still not a guarantee,
that's
but
right.
More than likely,
chances
recovery. Yeah, your chances of success
increase.
The problem is the judicial system has a tendency not to look at recovery for narcotics like they look at recovery for cancer.
No, you're right.
And when that cancer patient doesn't do something right and has to go back for cancer treatment, because now that the cancer has come back, people are, they embrace that cancer patient. They give them all kinds of support. When the narcotic addict, for whatever reason, falls off the wagon, I think that's the term that is used.
Yes.
When they fall back and relapse onto narcotics, they are then viewed as a major major, major criminal that cannot follow the rules, that is totally disregarding the orders of the court, that is a complete failure to society and is no longer valuable in this society. So you have narcotics recovery. First, you've got the judicial system that treats the poor, mostly African Americans, but the poor as criminals, and the affluent or white America as patients. Then you put those patients, you know, and some of those African Americans are able to slide into the patient category. So you have mostly white and a few African Americans as patients. Then they go through the recovery as patients, medically, you know, on a medical program, recovery program.
Medical model.
They then do the same thing that a cancer or diabetes patient would do. And instead of being treated like a cancer patient, they're then treated like the criminals that they came from before they got into recovery. So you throw them back in jail. So we still got a lot of work to do as it relates to how we are identifying recovery as medical patients. Are they, or are they criminals that's just getting a nice cushion to keep them out of jail? You know, I mean,
that's right.
That's all in that assessment process. Yeah, that's all in that assessment process.
And honoring what the assessment results are. And we are on the same page, because one thing I know in our drug court, Judge Meyer is very concerned that when somebody bonds out, mm-hmm. if their addiction isn't interrupted, what do you think they're going to do while they're on bond? Reoffend.
Reoffend.
Because their addiction hasn't been treated.
Exactly. Duh. So if
they come back again now with everything revoked.
So if the court system is trying to treat them as a patient. and then lock them up when they do things that patients do.
Exactly.
Are they a patient from
beginning? If you believe they are, by God, stand behind.
If you believe they're a patient, yes. Stand by them as a patient.
Yes.
If they're a criminal, don't call them patients.
Judge. Think Trockenmeyer doing that.
And that's why I've been in I don't want to say it like that. That's why I have approached Trockman. Judge, if you're going to treat, you know, Tyrone as a patient,
absolutely.
Then you treat Tyrone as a patient. But if you're going to treat him as a criminal, let me know up front, and I will come in as a lawyer for a criminal.
Wow.
Or you treat him as a patient, and I will come in as a lawyer for a patient.
Yes.
Don't play me, and then in the middle of the stream, I got to jump into my criminal defense mode when you've already got my client and my client's family and me on the strategy of a patient mode.
Some hope, yes.
It messes up the whole program, and it's not fair to my client. And that makes me and you get on our terms. And when I get in court, I can act a plumb idiot sometimes.
Well, I wish you would have been my attorney about 25 years ago.
Okay.
Boy, somebody fighting like that. And it does take somebody willing to be a voice. And I don't think judges just become that way. They're educated, or they've had it in their family, or they've mm-hmm. had that experience, and they're forced now to see relapse might be part of this deal.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's interesting how you just said, are you going to be a patient from start to finish or a criminal from start to finish?
Right. Judge Trockman, and I have had this conversation before, and quite frankly, he's very, very good at letting the client know up front. Okay,
yep.
You got narcotics problems, but if you got this, and your record says you are a violent criminal, I'm not treating you as a patient.
Right.
Trockman lets me know up front how he's coming at my client.
Sure.
See, he lets me know up front. If he sees, and I can, you know, and I do what I do and how I do it, and I can convince that he's a patient, Trockman treats him as a patient from start to finish.
Yes.
And if that relapse occurs, there are things in place and there are strategies that I use to deal with relapse of a patient.
That's right.
And there are other legal strategies I use when I have to defend a criminal.
Wow.
And make sure that the criminal has, you know, the protections of the Constitution as any other criminal, as any other citizen.
Absolutely.
As
and
any
we
other
want them
citizen.
To be honest with us, we better be honest with them.
Bottom line.
Remember the day, and I remember this when I worked at Mulberry when we first started. It was Parkside at Mulberry Center. If you relapsed, you were kicked out of treatment.
See, now.
It's not that way any. Well, there's still some of the philosophy, yeah, and some treatment programs.
There you go. And because they
but
come
we've
in.
We've gotten better at understanding relapse, but we still have a long way to go.
They come in and they treat them as a patient.
Yes.
And then if you relapse, if your cancer comes back, we're going to kick you out.
Right.
Well, come on. That's
exactly.
why they need. That's why they were there in the first place, to get rid of the cancer. So every time we look at the term narcotics or term recovery, put in, insert another term.
You're there. Absolutely.
Just say, so it's, well, we're going to put you in treatment for, instead of addiction, say cancer. We're going to put you in treatment for cancer. If that cancer comes back, we are going to continue to treat the cancer.
Yes.
So now let's put in the word narcotics. Let's put in the word addiction. We are putting you in recovery for addiction. If that addiction comes back, we will continue to treat you for the addiction. And if you look at it like that, then the clients that actually are in rehab for recovery,
mm-hmm,
will be successful.
I think you're absolutely
will
funny.
Be
yes.
More than likely,
yes,
will be successful.
Absolutely.
And that's how I approach it as an attorney.
Sure. Sure.
So, mm-hmm.
Woo. Verdelsky.
I'm sorry.
No. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah.
I love your energy and your compassion and
look, this thing called drugs.
It takes all of us.
It does.
It's even a black-white issue.
It's not.
Really.
It's not, and the judicial system has made it a black-white issue by providing programs for the drugs of choice for the general white population and providing prison for narcotics and addicts of the general black population. And that's how they've made it into a black-white issue. The legislature has done the same thing. They've got things in the Indiana legislature that deal with methamphetamine programs. You can ride down the street and see billboards for 800 numbers,
yes,
if you've got a methamphetamine problem. I'm not saying I haven't seen it, but the black clients I have, I can count them on one hand and have fingers left, those that have a methamphetamine problem.
Yeah. It's Ward County too. That's right.
You know, black folks just don't put, what do they make that stuff out of? Gasoline and
lithium
and battery fluid and Drano. And,
right.
You know, the brothers just don't put that up their nose. that's just something.
Smarter than that.
I won't say that. I'm just saying that's not the choice,
right,
of African Americans. They don't go around and open up a battery and get the acid out of it and put something on it and then call it dope. They don't do that.
Blow the house up.
Yeah, don't.
Thank you so much for coming with your candor and your ideas. And I hope all the judges are listening to you in the courtrooms. And I hope your offenders that you're protecting are listening to you in your office. And Tri-State, I hope you are listening. And we'll have Verdelsky back for sure, because he has a lot of great experience input for us. Thank you. Thank you, Verdelsky.
Thank you for
Thank
having
you
me.
Thank you all for tuning in.
Thank
He'll
you,
be back and has great ideas for guests in the future. So we look forward to more of the touch of Verdelsky Miller in our radio rehab. Until
Thank you.
Next week, do the next right thing.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.